Everyone, ooh, that's nice and loud. All right, happy January. Welcome back to all our year-round schools. I don't know if you noticed, but we have changed our January and our April meeting dates so we can accommodate our year-round schools. Prior to this year, we always had our meeting on the third Wednesday of January and April, and our year-round schools were not able to participate, so we changed that. We'll go ahead and call our meeting to order. And I hope everybody had a chance to sign in the back and get your blue cards. These are your voting cards. Do we have anyone joining us who is brand new to the DAC tonight? I see a couple hands. Excellent, excellent. Well, welcome, welcome. The District Advisory Council is kind of the SSC hub. It's also a place to find really good information and lots of good resources. You can check out our website, too, on Sandy Ego. What are we calling it now? SanDiegoUnified.org. And our DAC website has links for resources and all kinds of good stuff. We'll go ahead and do a public comment. And now just before we get started, I want to remind everybody that if you have a question or a comment, unfortunately we only have one microphone tonight, so I'll be handing that off if you do, but I do need you to tell me your name and the school you're representing, because we are recording all of these meetings. We record them for prosperity, and for any people who are unable to attend, you can go back and listen to the recordings. You know, if you're bored or you have insomnia, need to fall asleep. Any public comment for tonight? We do have our public comment at the top of our meeting, and I hope that each SSC is also putting their public comment at the top of every meeting as per the Green Act. I have one piece of public comment. This is the parent survey. I don't know how many people this might be hard to see, but it says school parent at the top, and these are parent surveys that come out once a year, and these parent surveys are a metric that we use in our LCAP to get kind of an idea of how you feel, how parents feel about the things that are going on in our schools. Our children also take this survey. It's part of the California Healthy Kids Survey. This is the CSPS, so California State Parent Survey. And so the staff also take that survey, and they put them all together, and they look at that from the triple perspective. Yay, we have another microphone. All right. So you should be, my son received this at Point Loma High. So if you haven't received the parent survey, please inquire with your principal, because these surveys are very important. We actually have the highest return rate out of any district in the state of California. So I think we should try to keep that up. Did I have a question here from the crowd?
Hi, Stu Bell from Scripps Ranch. We actually discussed this yesterday at our school site committee. And we were talking about the low response rate. So I suspect we may be high. I think you said we had a high rate in the state, but I assume that that's still probably less than 50%.
It actually is about 31%.
Yeah.
Yeah, but compared to every other district, they're hovering around 20, yeah, even less.
Yeah, I think we were at about 25%. We weren't too pleased with that number. I know one of the committee members talked about that it was quite lengthy. I haven't taken it, but that it was quite lengthy.
Yep, it is 8 pages. No, wait, sorry. That says version 8. It is, yeah, it's about 6 pages long.
Okay.
There is an online version.
Right, yeah. I know as a member of the federal government, you know, we have survey fatigue, and I assume that sort of spreads out across in other people's lives. So we were talking about how to make this simpler, this survey. We understand it's probably something that we can't change at our level, but possibly looking at maybe coming up, you know, schools coming up with their own to try to assess some of the, you know, how parents are feeling about their ability to engage, because that's some of the questions. Do parents feel like the schools, that they can engage the school, that the school is responsive to their needs, those kind of things, right? So, anyway, I just put that out there for something that we discussed yesterday, trying to figure out how to get a higher response rate. So,
thank you. I appreciate that. And now we have two microphones, so I don't have to walk around the room. I appreciate your feedback. Our family engagement program manager is actually here tonight, and that office participates and actually helps work with these, as does our guidance and counseling office. So any feedback is important, and really this is the only instrument we have to gather your feedback. So aside from emailing the LCAP at sandy.net or going to a board meeting or coming to this meeting, so I always try to talk about the importance of this. But yes, I like the idea of making it a little shorter, and that's definitely a piece of feedback we can pass on. All right. Was there any other public comment for tonight? All right. Well, let's go ahead. We have some introductions, and I'm going to grab my phone for a moment. Because I need a cheat sheet. We have, as part of our financial planning, monitoring, and accountability office, our resource teachers that support you, your site, your principal, and all things school site council and budget related. We have Erin Easter in the back, who signed everybody in along with Rachel. And Erin, if you could raise your hand when she's in Area 3, and Rachel is with Area 2. And a couple of our resource teachers are actually busy at the office, probably still working on budgets, because the budget books came out today. So hopefully you'll all be meeting with your SSCs over the next 2 weeks, getting some votes in. And we also have Miss Mary Johnson behind me. She's with Area 5. So you'll notice that Mr. Fred Hilgers, I got it right this time, of Area 6 is not here, and neither is Dario Gutierrez. And I did not see Adriana. Adriana Rivas Quezada, she's with Area 4, so she's also at the office tonight working hard on budgets to make sure everybody has what they need to make those, to get those votes in and to have those SSC discussions. We also have Drew Rollins here tonight. He's our chief operations officer, and there he is. He's here for our presentation tonight. And we also have Miss Teresa Leskowski from the Office of Language Acquisition, Family Engagement Department. So your survey feedback, that's the person who will be directing that feedback too. So that's one of the reasons why we have staff come to these meetings, that way they can hear from you personally. So we'll go ahead next and approve our minutes for December, and you'll find those. Oh, we didn't have quorum. Oh, bummer. Was everybody out partying already in December? My goodness. Well, we will not be voting on this. These are just notes because we didn't have a quorum. So just make sure you take that back with you and review that. And I believe we have quorum for tonight. Oh, we don't have quorum for tonight. Oh, I gotcha. All right, that's a bummer. Well, thankfully, we don't have too much to vote on other than just that. I'd like to go ahead and get right into our presentations for tonight. First up, we have, pardon me, I'm going to say this, hopefully properly, Ms. Isabel Goyer. Yes, Ms. Isabel Goyer, who is joining us from the census. She's our census partnership specialist, and she's going to go over a few things for us. Now, I don't know if you all know why the census is so important to the DAC.
Of course we know.
Can anybody? This is how we get our money. So every 10 years, it's coming around, and it's It's happening this year. I get excited about it because I know that it changes things. It can change our layout of how we draw our maps for voting and for all kinds of things. So I'm going to go ahead and invite Isabel up here to talk a little with us about it.
Thank you so much.
I think this is a little bit low. It might be low.
Thank you and good evening, everybody. As she introduced me, my name is Isabel Lemus, and I'm here today on behalf of the U.S. Census Bureau to let you know how we are going to conduct the census this year. As many of you should know, I hope that you can hear me. Sometimes I can't. Okay. Census in this country happens every 10 years. Every 10 years, every decade, and we are going to be counting everyone. And I want that to stay clear and loud and square. We are going to be counting everyone. What's the meaning of that? What's the meaning of that?
Every person counts.
Every person counts. There was a citizenship question that still members of the community, they asked me. That question is not going to be included in the census. And I appreciate, one more time, they give me this possibility to be here today, because census information, once we deliver that information to the government, we are going to determine two very important things. A lot of very important things are going to be determined out of census statistics. But one of them... the number of representatives. And I have the sad news to let you know that for the first time in history, California is expected to lose one or two seats. That's why we need your support to make this the most accurate census ever. Because of that, we are expecting to lose between one or two seats in Congress. The other important things that I want to say about the census statistic is used for distributions of the funds. Federal funds that we use for a lot of public programs, schools, Medicare, Title I, children with disabilities, you name it. A lot of programs that comes out of census statistics. If we don't provide that count accurate, we are going to lose money, and those programs are going to be hurt because they're not going to get the amount of money that they should be getting. So this is an example of the how census statistics is used for construction of schools, roads, nursing homes, daycare, transportation, many things census statistics used for. So this is an example. You can help me with that. Over there. This is an example of how much was allocated to California based on last census, 2010. For example, Medi-Cal was allocated this amount of dollars. It's good to say that the government allocate more than $375 billion per year for all of these programs, for all of the public programs, for the next 10 years. So if we miss someone, the person that is not counted, at least here in California, we are missing between $1,000 and $2,000 for that person. Just an example, last census, 2010, 2 million children were not counted. 2 million children under 5. That is the population that sometimes gets most undercounted. As a result of that, just in LA County, they lost $500 million per year. For services like preschool, children with special needs, because...
Where did that money go?
Is it not reported? It's not reported. If we report that in this room there are just 20 parents, the government is just going to send funds for 20 parents, not for maybe 80. That's why the count has to be the most accurate ever. That's why we are conducting this kind of programs, this kind of presentations, to let you know how important it is to participate in the census. So we have been working in order to close that undercount. We have been developing different programs and projects, and one is like this one today, providing information to the community about how important it is to participate in the census, working with the school, because the school is they are trustee voices. They can help us, right? And also we are going to have an ad campaign. We go to community events. Many things that we are working. We are also working in provide the questionnaire in multiple languages so we can close the language barrier, because we have so many communities, right? So we have a lot of members of the community that they don't speak English, so we are providing resources for them to be able to respond to the census as well. This year, for the first time, we are going to be able to take the census online. Many of you are familiarized with the paper questionnaire. For the first time, we are going to be able to provide the census online. We are going to have a call center as well. You are going to be able to call, because there are certain communities that they don't feel kind of comfortable responding online or giving information online. We are going to have a call center. There are areas that the access to the internet is quite low. They will have the opportunity also to call. We are going to send just to the 5% of the population, we are going to be sending the paper questionnaire. And we are going to have kiosks. For those ones that they don't have access to cell phone, to the internet, they are hard to reach, we are going to provide kiosks. We are working with the libraries. They can provide their computers, so whoever wants can go there and respond to the census in their computers. We are also working with the schools. If any school want to provide at least one computer, any parent can go and have answer to the census questionnaire in that facility, we will appreciate it as well. So the languages that we are going to be able to respond online or over the phone are this one: Spanish, Vietnamese, Korean, Russian, Arabic, Tagalog, all of those languages there. And then for those that are going to receive the questionnaire, we have a glossary. So is that the other link? We have the glossary in another 59 languages. Yes, so if you scroll down. 59 other languages. So we have been working really hard in order to close the language barrier, you know? So there we have an example, Hebrew. Any other language that you can find, you can go there and have an idea, keywords about what the census about, what are they asking in the questions.
But with that, you have to assume that people can read.
Yes, but we are going to provide also for Braille, and we are going to have assistance in other support. We have assistance for people that they are deaf, that they can. We're working with organizations that they work with those kind of community members, because we have those kind of sensitive community members that they don't read. And we're working with organizations that they are going to provide help, support for those parts of the population. Yes, yes. That's why we're working. And this is good that happens, because we're working really hard with all of the community organizations that can provide support. And that is another way that if you are related to any of those community organizations and you haven't heard from us, please let us know. I'm going to have my business card there. We are going to be more than pleased to go to your place, have a meeting, a presentation, show you where we have some resources, and we can collaborate, because you are the one that knows your community. We know about the census, but you know about your communities. So this is kind of a partnership. It's kind of a relationship. We need each other to make this campaign the most successful. So we can come back. Yes. Yes. Oh, to the presentation? The presentation? Okay, thank you. What have been doing for the schools? We have been creating different activities to involucrate statistic activities in a school. Not in a kind of a boring topic, but in a kind of a more exciting for all the ages. As I say one more time, children 0 to 5 are the most undercounted. So we are providing some for children, printable for children, storytelling, maps for elementary, primary, high school, so they can. We have the lesson plans developed already for the teacher, for the students. That is something that I want to show you in the link. And So here, also for those ones that have English as a second language and they are learning in school, we have different activities. You can go to that link and you can search by the subject. We have 5 subjects, and by the grade as well, the different activities that, where you can implement census topic in the classroom. And it's everything has been developed. Thank you. We are going to start sending the invitation to respond to the census March the 12th. This is where we're going to get invitations over mail with the link and the phone numbers where to call. We are going to have a follow-up. It's by April. We haven't responded using the online option on the phone call. We are going to send you the questionnaire. It's by the end of April. You haven't used any of those 3 channels. Then we are going to send numerator. If you don't want any stranger knocking at your door, you can use the other channels. So to avoid the... Yes.
I just want to know, do you get like a list of all the addresses, and that's how you figure out who you're going to count?
Follow up. Yes, we're going to have a list of those households that they haven't replied. Talking about household, we just need one person per household to respond to the questionnaire. There are multi-family households, sorry. We just need one person. There are multi-generational households. We just need one person to fill out the questionnaire. If there is any duplicate, it's okay, we're going to have a quality control operation as a census. Census is going to start, as I say, March the 12th. We are going to serve census in this country April the 1st. Last day to respond to the census is going to be July the 31st. And it's important to know April the 1st for those ones, for example, parents with children that have split custody. You should count that child where he or she spends more time. If you don't make up your mind, then use April the 1st as the benchmark. Where is the child April the 1st? At mommy's house or at daddy's house, then it depends where the child is, you're going to census the child in that household. The same for people with different multiple addresses, especially snowbirds. They should be count where they spend more time. Yes?
I was wondering about families who are doubling up and counted as homeless. Like, do they need to do 2 per that address, or how do we do that?
Can you repeat that, please?
For families that are doubling up, and so one family is counted as homeless because they're staying with someone else. So do they also do the census for that same address, or is it one person per household? Like, for that whole household, all the people that are living in the house, both families.
I will try to rephrase your question to see if we are on track. Let's say I have a friend of me, he doesn't have a house, but he's sleeping in my couch. Should I census in my address? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes. If he goes to the shelter maybe to get some food, maybe the shelter is going to provide information about him. We're going to have a quality operation after census to kind of clean the
duplicates. I'm not sure I was clear. So we have a lot of families who are doubling up. We call it doubling up. So that we have a family that's living with another family for a little while. Maybe they're sleeping on the floor in the living room or something. And so do both of those families do the census, or does the one in that
one
place and
one.
They count everyone that's staying there?
One. Okay. This is the sample, as I said before.
One per address.
Multi-families in one household, we just want to count one.
Thank you.
That's a good question. Thank you so much. Huh? No, we don't report, and that we want to talk about that.
The problem, like she was saying, is sometimes, let's say, the main person doesn't want to report all the other people that are living in their household because they're afraid that something's going to happen, that... You know, they get food stamps, or they get this, or they get that, that they're no longer going to get it because somebody's going to find out up there that more people were living there. And
so,
and then another thing, I was an enumerator in 2000, and then I was a crew leader in 2010, and then I applied also to be an administrator or whatever, but I haven't heard anything yet. But I thought it was kind of weird that it was only like for 1 month, April, and then that's it, it was over. I was like, no wonder there's a shortage. How can you reach everybody in 1 month? It's ridiculous, or 2 months.
Well, I think to respond to your first question, and this is important for us, we have to talk about confidentiality. This is what we're going to ask in the census. These questions here. The number of people living, we are not going to be asked for any kind of, I like personally calling sensitive information, anything regarding to immigration status, no social security number, no bank account, because it's going to be a scam, but we have to be ready about this. We have to be aware of that. Any financial information is going to be asked. So we should know about that. And then we can share any information in the census. The information you provide is going to be 100% secure. We can share that information with any other agency. If we fail in doing that, we can go to jail for 5 years, and we can be fined with $250,000. That's the fine that we can get. Is that information get shared with any other agency? So that's what we say. We can report to the leasing office, like the example that was here. Is there the household is meant to be for 5 members, and maybe there are 14 living there? We can share that information with any other agency. So California is also working in creating a database in which we are going to report just the numbers. So this information about here, the phone number, the name, the sex, we are not going to provide that to the government. California as a state is just working and provide just numbers, a statistic. And then we're going to talk also about jobs, as you say. And in this case, I think the campaign is going to be a little bit longer. I think based on the previous experience of 2010, that's why we're starting the campaign earlier. We're going to start inviting to participate in the census as earlier as March, and we're going to finalize the count in July the 31st. We are calling already. We are start calling already for the position. This is how the census is going to look. I think that you can see quite well there, but the questionnaire is going to kind of look like that. And we have, as she was mentioned before, we have jobs. We say we need a community to count a community. These are the jobs we are calling now. So we need people that help us to count those ones that are not expected to reply online. We expect between 65 to 70 of the population to respond online, so we have to go out and reach that others, and that's why we have these positions. Quickly, because I think I'm over time. It's over there. Minimum age to apply, 18 years old, great for the senior high schoolers. They get to know how the government works. If they're applying for college, they can say something for college. And also, we want everyone, for all the spectrum of the society, to apply. People feel more comfortable with someone from their community knock at their door that wants some stranger knock at their door, right? So they need to be citizens or green card holders. That means they need to have residence to apply for this position. They get paid weekly. They have also paid training. And if they use their cards, they also get paid for that as well. Information to apply, you can go there, and we are already calling for this position. So,
flexible hours.
Thank you so much. Minimum of 20 hours per week to be available. As I said before,
I have a question. We know that we are having some kids that they come from TJ. Are those kids to be counted also, and how they are going to do it? Also, I know that some of the kids that they live here in the county, they are also homeless. How do they are going to count them? And a lot of the families that we have in City Heights, some of them, they are in issue about immigration status. How that people is going to feel comfortable about answering these questions? Thank you.
Thank you for the questions about binational. We call it binational. So can I? Okay, thank you. For those ones, and especially San Diego has that situation, we have a lot of community members that they live in Tijuana and they attend the school here. But they need an address to be able to enroll in the school here, right? So they should be counted here. Because if not, they're going to be using the resources and that school is going to suffer because that child is not counted. So even for those ones that work here and live in Tijuana, they pay taxes here. They should be taking the census here. We are working also with the Mexican consulate. We are working with the INE. It's the international, you know, the INE is the National Institute in Mexico for
electoral.
For the Mexicans that live abroad. It's kind of hard for me to say in English. So for them to know, like, hey, is census coming in America? You should be census in America. It happened that this year is a challenge because it's also census coming in Mexico. But it's important for you to know. That's why we go again back and forth to the confidentiality. That child that is living in Tijuana and is attending a school here needed an address from here. So the school is reporting. If the school doesn't report those children, that school is going to suffer. And that information is not going to be shared because we can share. There is a confidentiality. We can share that information with any other agency. But it's important that you help us to let those family members know that that child, even though he's living in Tijuana, should be counted here. We're working with all of the embassies because we don't only have Mexicans. We have all of the embassies. There are around 24 embassies in San Diego. So it's a big, very national program that we have. And then the questions about homeless. We are going to count homeless as well. We are working closely with the shelters, with the soup kitchens. We are working with their children, those children that cross the border, that they are refugee. We are working with those organizations, with the rescue organizations, the refugee organizations. They all know about this and how important, because they depend on these federal grants. And we need their support so they can continue offering those services as well. And if I remember, your last question was about? So these are
But
as I say, these are the questions that we are going to ask. There is not going to be any question regarding immigration status. That is not going to be in the census. And we can share that information with any other. And it's, we can share that information with any other agency. So it's 100% secure. And that's why we're working closely with also organizations that provide services to immigrant communities as well. And so thank you for the question, because sometimes there are so many, especially homeless. Everybody cares about homeless. We are going to be counting homeless because we need to continue providing services for those shelters so they can go to a place where they can get warm. Yes. And as I said before, last, please, if you have, if you are related to any organizations that work with the community, let us know. We are going to be more than glad to be there and provide information about the census, answer all your questions like we did here today. And we appreciate your support, and let your neighbors, friends, relatives, please, census coming, how important it is to participate, how secure it is as well.
And if you didn't pick up the, there's about 8 different things you can pick up back on the table that were the talk about the census, one of which is the confidentiality and also various different pieces of information that I recommend taking back to your school site. The best thing that we could do is talk to our schools, talk to our parents, talk to our parent groups, talk to the principal. Maybe if you've got an e-blast going out, put some information in that email. A lot of people can access it on their phones. You can talk about it at morning coffees or morning assemblies. Just make sure that it starts, that's a conversation that's happening, especially now because it's going to be happening soon. Next up, we have our LCAP presentation, and we're going to be discussing LCAP goals 4.7 and 6. And now there is an LCAP user-friendly version on your tables, but on the back of your take to your SSCs, and I do apologize that you don't have, I don't see the Spanish version, and I might just not have picked it up from the back, but yeah, is that in Spanish? Okay, it's in Spanish on the back, I just didn't grab it. The LCAP goal for the particular section that Drew will be discussing is on the back there, and then you'll find section 6, or rather goal 6, on your table. So I'll go ahead and hand it over to Mr. Williams to discuss operations, right?
Good evening. So This is a presentation we, I feel funny standing in front of it, hold on. This is a presentation we gave to the Board of Education last night at their request, again, talking about LCAP pieces, I should be very clear about that, pieces of LCAP Goal 4 and LCAP Goal 6. We presented it last night with my partner in crime, John Hensley, who's the Director of Physical Plan Operations. He's home with a sick wife tonight, so I'm doing it. Again, Goal 6, and let me also tell you, this is about a 10-minute. We were requested by the board to make a 10-minute presentation, so I'll try to keep it to 10 minutes here, and then we can talk about things that you guys want to talk about related to this. Goal 6, well-orchestrated district-wide support services and communication. There's a piece in there talking about, again, physical plant operations. Physical plant operations is basically the maintenance component of the school district. The other piece is LCAP goal, and so I guess this is 6.6.2. And then LCAP goal 4.7, there's a number of items in there. This really kind of addresses LCAP goal 4.7.1 through 5, I think it is. We have another item in there that is about lead in drinking water, and that's a presentation we're going to make to the board in February. So love to talk with you about that sometime, but that's not really what the focus of this is. Where do I got to go? There we go. So again, the terminology we use in the district is physical plant operations, some often referred to as like M&O, maintenance and operations, but to give you a sense of what that is. It's facility maintenance and repair, equipment repair, custodial, landscape, environmental compliance. We deal with energy and utilities, paying our utility bill, dealing with solar, those kind of things, and also a safety office. So what we did in the presentation last night with the board is we just kind of remind them all of all the different pieces and parts of the group and some of the things that we deal with to give a sense of scope. You know, there are, we had 74,000 work orders for maintenance items last year. We're maintaining and caring for more than 15 million square feet of buildings, 23 million square feet of asphalt, on and on and on. We have 46 solar energy systems. And we lose along the bottom here, one of the things that we talked about as well, we have more than 62,000 smoke and heat detectors in every classroom and building, and we're required by state law to touch and inspect every one of those every year. So when you think about things like that, it takes a lot to keep this machine moving. We committed to the superintendent two goals this year, two broad goals, and this is really where our conversation went last night, digging into these two goals, moving from reactive to proactive, increasing efficiencies in how we utilize our staff resources, and we'll talk about that, and then also communicating and collaborating with the school sites as we're working through those services. We wanted to remind the school board, again, when we were making this presentation last night, why our role is important, and for those who can't see this quote, facility quality is an important predictor of teacher retention and student learning. The physical and emotional health of students and teachers depend on the quality of the physical location, which makes establishing safe, healthy buildings essential. So, you know, we just wanted to highlight that. We know what our job is and why it's important to do that. It does affect how students learn and their performance. So we always want to keep focused on that. So under the heading of increase efficiencies in managing our staff resources, we have these items, realigning our staff to better support schools. We are building a semi-annual scheduled maintenance team. And then we had a bunch of other items that we are also working through. But again, in the essence of making our presentation in 10 minutes last night, we just focused on two areas. So, July of this year, we reorganized our maintenance group where we were aligned, broken up into basically four geographic zones across the district. We wanted to kind of keep that focus. One of the things we ran into getting into this was, could we, so each of these If you think about it, each of these zones deals with about 50 schools. We wanted to keep that relationship and keep the customer service piece more close to at least 1 to 50 rather than 1 to 200. What we moved to, though, keeping the same zone alignment as far as customer service, but we broke out our maintenance piece and have realigned into four maintenance components: corrective maintenance, preventive maintenance, scheduled maintenance, and maintenance projects. So we believe all of that leading to better service to the schools. Corrective maintenance is that just that basic, I need, something's broken and I need it fixed. We have, through the first half of this year, we've received 45,000 work orders. So we're ahead of schedule. And of that, all the work orders we get, all the work orders we manage, 69% of those are that corrective. Something's broken, I'm calling up to tell you something's broken and we need it fixed. Just yesterday, we just used an example. Yesterday we had 324 work orders called in just on that day leading up to our board meeting. And we get everything you can imagine, we get that call. So our second piece of maintenance is preventive maintenance, trying to be, stay ahead of it, change the oil in your car kind of thing. What we realized is we weren't doing enough of that. And so what we worked on this year and have made progress, and again, it's kind of washed out and all that, but as a proportion of our workload, we're doing more preventive maintenance than we have in the last three previous years. So we want to fix it before it breaks. We want to fix it in a way that we're, to the extent we can, not disrupting the classroom and the learning environment. It's the right thing to do, right? Again, you want to change the oil on your car kind of thing. And then just be more efficient in how we're using our resources. So that's the reason for doing that. One of the new things we did this year was create two scheduled maintenance teams, a team A and a team B. As we say here, since we've stood these up, we had the first team up in August, the second team started in October. We've gone to 112 school sites and we're working through it. The idea with this is particularly for those minor kind of things, a stained ceiling tile or those kind of things, that it's not critical that they get fixed right away. What was happening previously is they always kind of didn't rise to the top of the priority list, so they get pushed down. So what the intent of this is, and it appears to be working, is we collect those things and are telling a school site, we're going to be there on the week of March whatever and take care of all those little things. Because one of the things we saw was just the frustration in a school not knowing when that was ever going to get done. So, and as you can see, when we look at our work, this is a pie divided up basically by the priority of the work orders we receive. A big bulk of them, this big yellowish slice, are those routine things that, should be fixed but can wait a little bit. And, we unfortunately, like most areas of the district, don't have all the resources to do everything that we should and could do. So this is a way to get those things resolved, but everyone knows kind of what the plan is. With this, if a school site says, hey, you have it in here as this routine thing that you're going to get to in March, I can't wait that long because whatever, we certainly will move it up and get it resolved sooner than that. But that was the idea, and that's the first, this is the first year that we've gotten into this schedule this way. The last piece of our maintenance program, we had corrective maintenance, preventive maintenance, schedule. Now we have maintenance projects. The last piece of this is the bigger stuff we do, where we try to anticipate our needs, group things in the larger baskets, if you will. So one of our examples of this is converting to LED lighting. You really can't see. This is a fluorescent light bulb here, LED light bulb there. But we are working through. We are doing, we've done about a third of the school district already. I'm trying to remember the numbers on it. That's a whole bunch of them. I think it was 33,000 light fixtures. We've gotten one of the other things within our maintenance projects piece is trying to use other money. For example, this one is money we got through the California Clean Energy Jobs Act. But as you can see, what it does for us, before LED lights, we had 100, and this is just an example of 16 schools where we did this. We had 145 work orders out for lights out. That's gone down to 82. A lot of that is because it's not every single light at a school that gets changed to LED. It's the basic fluorescent fixture. So we still have some of those regular old incandescent lights that are out that kind of contribute to this number. But the bigger piece is bulb life. If you look, a fluorescent fixture, we get about a 2-year life out of it. LED is going to give us a 20-year life. 5-year for the ballast in the fluorescent fixture, and then we think we're about 55% energy savings. So all those things come together. You know, it's more reliable lighting in the classroom for the student. It is reducing our energy cost. And then from our perspective, it's also reducing our maintenance burden now and into the future. So that's the idea of that. We try to do these things where we can on other money beyond the general fund, whether it's this one, like I said, which was the Clean Energy Jobs Act. We also tap into some of the district's bonds funds. And we're doing things like this. We're doing working through a program or starting up a program of restroom renovations, because we know that's near and dear to a lot of folks. Security cameras, some of those things where you see single point of entry going into the school for security reasons. Those are all of those kinds of things that will work through this process. The other thing we committed to with the superintendent was doing better at our communication and our communication with the school site. Again, we developed a list of things we're doing as a way to improve that communication. And last night at the board meeting, we highlighted one of those things, which was our monthly work order report. So again, we have a automated system that we manage, you know, our however many thousands of work orders we're going to receive. Again, last year that was 74,000. We're on track to be much more than that this year. So it's a lot goes into that of collecting that work, making sure the work gets done, et cetera, capturing the time and the cost and all that. So when you're dealing with that volume, it gets cumbersome. What we've worked out is that on a monthly basis, we can spit out to all our schools what their work orders are in our system, what the list looks like, what they are, how long they've been there, those kinds of things. Gives the school a better feel of what we're up to. Also gives the school an opportunity to say, oh, wait a minute, that one I don't need it anymore. We figured it out. Or sometimes we get a duplicate where you call it in and you call it in. So we're able to clean those things up. Helps us focus on the things that are really there and important to the school. So each month now, this gets mailed or emailed to the principal and the head custodian for them to take a look at, digest, tell us we're missing something, tell us again, oh, that one's solved, don't need it anymore. So as simple as that sounds, we felt that was a big breakthrough in our communication. We made this slide when we were kind of building the presentation and couldn't let go of it. It was just the idea of how many different ways we're talking and working with the school sites and communicating with them. We've got an improved website that is coming online within the next 30 days. We have the interface with the staff, and we have a service desk you can email into, you can call into, you can get the work to us. We have the monthly reports. We have a principal's work group that we've been working with just to make sure what we're doing is really meeting the principal's needs, so they've been very helpful in that sense. Particularly at the start of the year, we've established, and this is a few years going now, we've established a principal's hotline where we have a number for the principal that says, we'd appreciate it if you do the normal channels to get what you need, but if it isn't working, call this number. We guarantee that a real person will answer it, and we'll figure it out, and we will get it done. And I think that's been very helpful. It was really focused on our maintenance group, but we'll take any phone call. We get ones talking about, well, the bus schedule screwed up. Okay, we'll connect you with the transportation guys or something with IT. So we're proud of that. We also work on site visits to our principals, particularly new principals. And what we do with that is take the maintenance team, take the maintenance supervisor responsible for that particular school, the custodial supervisor, the landscape supervisor, get them all to sit with the principal and just talk about what we think we're doing this school and what the principal thinks needs to be done. So the intent is that we have a lot of different ways to keep that communication flowing and do our best to service the schools. So in a nutshell, that's what we presented last night. Again, my buddy John is not here because he's home, so that's not me, but that's what we have.
How many maintenance staff do you have?
Well, it depends on how you count it. So guys handling tools, that is around 250. We have 73 in our landscape group. We have about 500 custodians assigned throughout the district.
And is that enough?
Probably not. You know, it's, you know, the other thing that you realize is the district has a very large capital bond program doing a lot of things. One of the examples we discussed last night with the school board was we have now air conditioned every one of our schools. And if you go back on this guy, you see somewhere here. We serviced 17,128 air conditioning filters last year. You know, so that's a lot of work. And as the district has air conditioned all those schools, we have to bring on more air conditioning maintenance guys. And we've done that, but it spreads us thinner and our budget thinner. We try.
Yeah. Hi. And you got a lot of work. From my calculations, you said you had over 62,000 devices to check for fire safety, I guess it is?
Yeah, so that's heat detectors, smoke detectors, above the ceiling, below the ceiling, in the ductwork, all that.
So that's over 5,166 a month over 12 months. Your people are able to do that?
In that particular area, it's a combination of in-house and contract workforce. And that's the only way we get it done is because we're able to rely on contractors. What we do with that, too, is we kind of flip-flop. So one year you as a contractor would inspect this building, the next year in-house staff. And that way we kind of have a little bit of checks and balances with it as well.
Okay. So you also talked about the LED lights and the cost savings. How much of a cost are we saving when parking lot lights stay on some of the schools all day long, every day?
Yeah, that is a challenge for us.
And I'm seeing some areas where there's no response at all to the school because they've called to have those fixed. Yeah. And then we have, and I'm not even representing the school I'm really here for, just something I happened to notice. In the last, 3 weeks, there's been 3 different fire alarms going off. One I know for sure was bogus, and it interrupted a meeting we had, just went on and on. How are the fire alarms dealt with? Do you have a central panel somewhere in your operations center that feeds back live information saying this fire alarm is going off and it's a problem?
Yes. So there's a lot to that question. So first of all, you have to realize, look at this building. The average age of the buildings in the school district is 48 years old or so. So think about how much effort that takes to keep those things going. Yes, we have a bond program that is modernizing and renewing a lot of that, but we still have a lot of old dog stuff. Fire alarm systems report centrally. They report to the school police department. We also have visibility of it within the maintenance department. And I tell you, that stuff gets hard to track. One of the things we intend to do working through the bond is some upgrades to not necessarily the fire alarm panels, but there's some areas where that needs to happen, but also for that communication system that comes back to school police and to the maintenance guys. Right now in some schools, we can tell you the fire alarm went off and we can tell you it was in building 100. Current technology is, it's that heat detector in that room right there.
Right.
And it's finding the balance in that and getting to that, but it's a long way still to go.
So last thing, do you have anything to do with security cameras?
Yes.
Why would security cameras be unplugged?
They shouldn't be. I mean, yeah.
And you know, I'm specifically talking about Lincoln, and, yeah. and even for the fire alarms, it's Lincoln
yeah.
High.
Yeah, I understand.
And
yeah.
So I'm concerned that if we've got security cameras unplugged, they've been unplugged for the duration that I've been there on campus. I'm there almost every day.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen them plugged back in yet.
Okay.
So I have a concern about safety, because
sure.
that's understandable. A blind spot.
Sure. And I think Lincoln High School, I'm not mistaken, has more security cameras than any other school we have. We have about 1,500 and growing security cameras across the district that we're monitoring. That, again, even, you know, we have some, we're getting to that point where that technology has changed dramatically, and those first vintage cameras we put out are kind of wearing out. They're obsolete, or the plastic dome around them is so aged that it fogs, and you all you see is a shadow if you were to look at it. So,
last question,
yes, sir.
You say you're renovating restrooms. Are there any plans to put smoke detectors in there, especially for the high schools?
Not that I'm aware of. There's smoke detectors. There are also vape detectors now.
Yes.
And I think that's a little bit of a discussion. We don't necessarily have that in our plan at this point, is what I'm
saying. That's a big deal, because at Lincoln, they locked all the girls' restrooms.
Yeah, I hear you. I know.
We want it in your pants.
I hear you. I'll take that back. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for the presentation. My question is, and I'm going to use your example, like with the converting of the LED lighting. So are those costs, like for the light bulbs, for the cameras, are those type of costs public? Because when it comes to renovation, when it comes to contractual work, when it comes to hiring anybody that does any type of construction, there's always a margin of pocketing monies, right? So especially with that, and we'll just use your example of lighting. For example, light bulb might cost $40, but the contractor might charge $50. And now when it comes to ordering 500 bulbs, that's quite a lot of money that they can split amongst people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So where are those costs? Are those public?
Sure. So contracting department works for me as well. and I tell you, they do a very good job. We are required to follow the rules of the Ed Code. We're required to follow the rules of the public contracting code. Any construction project over $15,000, which in the world of construction these days doesn't go very far at all, has to be competitively bid. So there are competitive bid openings for those things. I think we do a pretty good job of dealing with our suppliers and what we buy and when we buy. I will tell you, you know, we work on SDG&E, we work on LED lightings. There have been rebates with LED lights that we take and roll back into the program. There's those kind of things.
So is there a department that does the checks and balances between actual cost and possible over cost or overage? Is there, like, do you have like a separate, like an accounting department? How does that work?
There isn't a specific audit function, if you will, that does that. We are, our strategic sourcing is shopping and working the bid process to get to the best pricing. I would offer that. I will give you an example where we recently had to replace the backup batteries for our data center. And we originally went into that with a quote from contractor number one at nearly $100,000. It was 90 something thousand dollars. We worked through it. Contractor two or three or whatever down the line, we spent $50,000 doing that. So it's just that work we do. There's not a person I can point to that says that person can tell you the answer to that.
Where is this information? Like, how would I find it?
Well, all our public bids are advertised, and the bid results are advertised. Every contract that is awarded is awarded through the school board. And you can see that on school board agendas as well.
Okay.
And when they show a school board agenda, they would show a contract awarded to Company X. They tell you when it was advertised. They tell you how many bidders there were, that kind of thing. But I can provide you more information if you'd like.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hi, sorry to bother you. It's April Owens from Hancock. I have a question for you. Do you require, when you handle, like, if the improvements, right? So if if a construction company comes in to work on a building, you handle those types of contracts, right?
Some, yes, and then okay. I have a counterpart that also works on the big projects, the capital bond program carrying
okay.
out. But
well, I have a question. So yeah. do you require those companies to carry insurance? Because usually
Absolutely.
In the real world where, you know, if they don't finish the job or they do a very poor job, there's usually some type of reimbursement of funds. I know that we did have a problem with a couple companies mm-hmm. that were working on some schools that failed to live up to standards, and they had to be replaced. So I'm just wondering if we have a way to get that money paid back if they did a poor job.
We do.
Okay.
So they are bonded. They have a performance bond. Mm-hmm. They are insured. We just recently have been it's never easy, though, I'll have right. to tell you, right? But we recently have gone through that with a construction contractor. Mm-hmm. All our construction work has warranty as well.
Okay.
So we are also pursuing that. If, for example, and we did a lot of this last winter, you know, schools got air conditioned, we put the air conditioning up on the roof, lo and behold, it rains, and now the roof leaks.
Yes.
So that's some of the good news, bad news in the work we do. These guys are the guys that have to go out there and react and respond to that roof leak. We get out there and find out that, oh, it's because of the air conditioning contractor put a hole in there. So now we're going back and pursuing the warranty with that contractor. But it takes some effort and some time,
okay.
and we've already invested some time just figuring that part out. But
okay.
but we do, no, there are very stringent insurance requirements, bonding requirements, and all that stuff.
Okay, thank you so
You're
much.
Welcome.
I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
We can do one more question.
I can talk all night about this. I like it.
I'll try to be brief. Donald Thomas, Patrick Henry High. I can certainly appreciate what you do, and my hat's off to you in the area of maintenance. I'm employed by the Postal Service in the vehicle maintenance craft, and that's our model. Scheduled maintenance, and what you're expressing, though, is your failure rate with your pie chart, with
yes.
your corrective
right.
maintenance,
right.
and hopefully that'll get better for you.
Yes.
Hopefully,
absolutely.
You know, as you do more scheduled maintenances,
yeah,
failure rate will go down.
And I think we said in here, we're very intentionally trying to move from reactive to proactive. And
exactly.
It's a hard thing to do, and I'll very honestly with you, our guys like being the hero. They like running out there and solving that flame shooting out of the electrical outlet and or all that stuff.
But
they enjoy doing that.
But my specific question for you,
yes, sir.
Are you guys running into many abatement issues? Because you made mention of the ages of the building.
Yeah.
And is that something you guys contract out?
We contract out. We have folks within our department that are aware and trained of things like asbestos. We are required still to have every one of your schools has an asbestos management plan. There's a little binder in the front office that tells you all about it. But, yeah, we're very sensitive to that. Lead-based paint, asbestos, those kinds of things. So, sensitivity to that. Done? Good?
Oh.
Marissa Grant from Linda Vista Elementary. Since we're talking about proactive instead of reactive as well as safety, the note about vape detectors in high schools, I think let's be proactive in middle schools as well.
I hear
it's,
yeah.
We need to.
I hear you. Yeah. I think we are still kind of wrestling with does it really work and what is it kind of things, but we'll take that aboard.
Maybe some other questions. So we have.
Done.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Drew. And we do have an opportunity for everyone to provide feedback. And also, when you provide feedback, because we're going to hand out our laptops, and we actually, in your packets that you got tonight, we also have a paper survey. Unfortunately, our translation department wasn't able to get back to us in time with the Spanish translation, but we do have our translators here who can help. So if you need some assistance with that, please raise your hand. Let us know so Kathy and Rodolfo can come around and help. So we really want to make sure that every time we put as district staff in front of you with a presentation that you're able to give us feedback on what it looks like at your school site. So tell us what's not working at your site. What's working at your site? The iPads are going around, but you can also pull this up on your phones or laptops if you have them. I am going to have Mary pull up the link for us for our survey. It's pretty much the same survey every time. So we're just asking if you saw anything from this presentation reflected at your site. This is a great place to put in that if you want vape detectors. Because when the parents speak, generally, the district listens. And there's a lot of budget stuff in there, I know. And for the questions about budget, if you go to the board docs, which is the Meet the Board on our homepage, and you can go through that link to get to the board docs and search in the board docs for construction, for bond. We also have a citizens oversight committee that looks at all of those things, so independent citizens oversight board. So if there are any questions about budget, that can be a good avenue to find. So take a few minutes, tell us what you think. Give me one moment, we'll pull it up on the screen.
If we're working, yes, we're possible. Thank you.
All right. I do not want to keep you here all night. I know maintenance is a lot of fun. Lots of great feedback. I appreciate Drew being here and giving his presentation, and I think that these are good conversations to have. Bring them back to your SSC. I know we had a parent here ask if they can take their survey home and take it back to their school site, talk at their school site. I encourage that. There is also an LCAP email. It's the lcap@sandy.net. And if you want to continue to provide feedback as an SSC, please do that. It's important that they hear from you and see how this is working at the school site. So if you need to make sure that they know about that, we can also, the presentation that Drew gave is also on our website. It's on our DAC, rather it's in board docs. But if you go to the DAC website and hit agendas, it'll take you to that. And I know that John's contact information is on there. So if you need to provide direct feedback to him, please do that. We are going to go ahead and hear from Mr. Thomas Liberto. We're going to end up talking a little bit about Title I and a little SPSA and a little budget. So a little schmoosh of everything. All right, here you go.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Oh, no, I know it's been a long meeting, but let's try that again. Good evening, everyone. It makes me feel so much better. Thank you. It's good to see all of you. One of the favorite things I love about this position is this meeting. And that might sound funny, but I've been around the district for so long with so many different communities and schools and people coming in and out of this committee. There's people here tonight that I used to work with, people that I have served in professional capacities with, parents from communities that I've served in. So it's really neat to see people over time that I haven't seen in a long time, and you all know who you are. But I say that to thank you again for your dedication. We met quorum again tonight. We were having problems with that last year, but with your dedication and your participation, we're not having that issue anymore. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for your service. We really appreciate it. We did. We hit it right on the dot.
Yes.
So glad nobody left. We're going to talk about the supplemental, but to do that, I want to back up and talk to you about the Title I base ranking. So if you remember when I presented last time and the time before, every school in San Diego Unified gets a base allocation through the Title I program that qualifies for Title I. So if a school has 40% or more students qualifying for free and reduced, then they get an allocation. And it is allocated on a decrement system, meaning those schools that have a higher percentage get a higher amount per student than those that are lower. But that's a system that we've been using for many, many years in San Diego. And I want to remind you again that there is no federal requirement to give these dollars directly to schools, but our Board of Education in San Diego believes in the local control, and so they've taken $15,500,000 every year of our Title I allocations and given them to the school sites. So that would be your yellow sheet, which is right here. This was approved by the Board of Education last night. So you've seen it a couple of times now. Last night was the second time the board has seen it. But this, you can look at your school, and it's arranged, I believe, in order of percentage of qualifying students. So the first school would be Logan Elementary. I'm surprised I could see that without my glasses on, but I did. And I think they're at 98 or 99%. So you see their allocation, and then it goes down through all the other middle schools. That is the base allocation. 97, thank you. That is the base allocation for every school that qualifies for Title I. So I tell you that because, amazingly, last year we were able to change the system and not only give the base allocation, but we were able to give the supplemental. So this is supplemental Title I dollars, still part of the apportionment that the federal government gives to the district. Again, not required to go to schools, but with our superintendent's leadership and the board's support, we have looked at giving the base allocation plus these dollars. So it is another, my mind just went blank. I have to look at the bottom to see what the amount is. It's $8.2 million additional going to the school site. Now, we don't allocate this the same way we do as the base. we allocate it a little differently. So if there's a Title I child at a school, they automatically get what we call one factor. But then we replicate those throughout. And at the very bottom, there's also English learners, chronically absent, homeless, low-performing African-American, and mental health resource service students. So if the child is Title I and they're receiving mental health services and they happen to be an English learner, then they get three factors. So for that child at that school, we would multiply 3 times the dollar amount of 95. The school would get 95 times 3 for that child at that school. When you start to blow that out amongst school-wide, some schools are receiving quite a bit of money to address those needs within that school. So this one's done a little differently. It's done alphabetically. So if you'd like to take a minute and look at your school, this was actually approved by the Board of Education on January 14th. So we brought it to you. You all thought it was a great idea. We made the recommendation. The board continues to think it's a great idea. So schools will not only be getting what's on the yellow if you're a Title I school, also be receiving this allocation. So I'll give you a couple of seconds just to look your schools up, and it's a nice, nice amount of money in most cases. As you're looking at your school, someone asked a very good question that I meant to cover, but I forgot. The monies came from the central Title I budget in years past for things that we were providing to schools. So they were like services. So maybe we had a block of counselors that we would dole out, paid centrally in Title I and giving them to the schools. Another thing was the arts education program through our VAPA department. And so we had a block of money that we would allocate to provide arts prep time for teachers to do PLCs, professional learning communities, within their schools, but we paid for it centrally. So a couple years ago, we scrubbed that, for lack of better terms, that central budget, and we said, you know, if a school wants to have coaching, or if they want to have the AEP program, or they want to have the counselors for this, why don't we push the money out to the schools and let them decide? So it became more local control, and so we took that $8.2 million out of the central Title I budget and put that through the supplemental into the school sites. So now the school sites, theoretically, are choosing things that they really want to. Again, the importance of you being on SSC, you are a voice in that decision-making process. So that's where those monies came from. We're very excited that we're able to do that. Again, it's 15.5 for the base, another 8.2, so that's 23.5, I think, total of the $38 million that we received from the federal government for Title I. Yes? And then you'll have LCFF on top of that, exactly. Oh, I'm sorry, you should have it in the microphone.
My question is, the source of the funds will it be Title I basic, Title I supplemental, and then LCFF?
So LCFF is not going away. It'll be the same. It'll go towards teacher salaries and different ways to fund part of the general fund. But yes, you will still receive those dollars plus these two allocations. So the Title I base, this code, if you want to write it down, will be 30100. So as you're at your SSC meetings, if you're starting to look at budgets, anything that's 30100 will be the base allocation. And then the supplemental will be 30106. So as your principal starts to say, we got X amount of dollars in 3106, you can go, oh, that's the supplemental that Tom talked about it. Know exactly where it's coming from and exactly what it's supposed to be spent on. Okay, yes.
It's column S, the one we're looking at.
So for this, I do have to put my glasses on. Let me see. Yes, that will be the amount that school is receiving all the way to the right. So the grayed out area, that was some information, I think, from last year. And then the right-hand portion is this year, and then this year's allocation will be the far-right column S. Exactly. So that's the supplemental. It's exciting. I don't know if you have any questions. I'll try and answer them if you do. But it's pretty straightforward. And again, I'm super proud that as a district we do what we do with these dollars, because most districts you'll talk to, they keep the money centrally and they provide services to schools like we were doing, but now we're pushing out that almost $25 million directly to the schools and letting them decide. Okay? All right. Thank you. SPSA update. This is very, very quick. Hopefully, you were involved in your SPSA at the beginning of the year. We just got those approved at the Board of Education last night. Now, you may say, we did them at the beginning of the year. Why did we get them last night? The state provided a new template for us. So the state says, this is what we want your SPSA to look like, or these are the components that you need to have. We reworked it for our district to make it a little more user-friendly and in line with what we are doing as a district, still keeping all of those components in. So it was almost like starting over. The good news, and the thing that I'm excited about as a former principal, and I've told every principal in the district, some of you are here, you can attest that I said this, the years that I spent a lot of time on my SPSA as a principal and focused on the goals and did a good job of writing measurable goals and monitoring them, those are the years that my school's performance went way up. Some years were better than others. Quite honestly, some years we didn't pay as close attention to the SPSA goals, and those were the years that our scores didn't go up. So there's a direct correlation, and I'm really excited that when the state gave us the template and said it has to be aligned to your LCAP and you need to do this and that, it was in line with our thinking already, and we were making sure that this template is usable so that schools can make this a living, breathing document that as they kind of go year to year to year, or I'm sorry, month to month to month, because it's a one-year plan, they should be monitoring things. If they're really paying attention to those things that they said they were going to improve in, and they're putting their dollars towards that improvement, we should see improvement. If not, then we should be backing up and reanalyzing and going, what do we need to do differently? Because we're not getting the improvement. So it's a wonderful thing. The board approved them last night. Where we're going now is the plans that were just approved were for this current school year. We're going to be starting on next year's plans at some point. And this might even be news to some of the principals in the group that I'll tell you. You should be receiving a survey of principals very near future, hopefully, that is asking about what timelines you like. We have a little bit of flexibility, not a lot. The Ed Code says that the board has to approve the school's SPSA before you can spend any categorical dollars. So that has to be done, but we may be able to start early, and as long as we get done by a certain time, retroactively go back. So we're investigating all of that. But this year's timeline was much different than in years past. There was some good to it, and there was some bad to it. So we're going to ask principals and sites what you felt about the timeline, what makes most sense to you. If we were to do everything coming up now, some of the data isn't quite available. So you're going to have your SBAC data, so there's benefit to delaying, because if we wait until right before we come back to school, you'll have all of that data. But the bad news is most of you are on vacation, the SSCs aren't meeting. So we're really trying to weigh, and there is no good answer. That's basically what I'm trying to tell you. There's no like, this is the best. But we want to poll everybody to find out what you think is the best. And so that survey should be coming out rather quickly. I tell you all that to say we don't know when the next phase is going to be for the SPSA. But we will, as soon as we know, let you know, because you should be very intimately involved in that with your SSC. Any questions on the SPSAs? Yes?
A couple of weeks ago, there was an article in the newspaper about that they are going to cut the funds for the food for the kids. Is that true?
If it is, it's news to me. I have not heard that, no.
No?
We have no plans to do that.
Okay.
Matter of fact, one of the initiatives in the governor's budget, which I'm going to speak to the next agenda item, he actually has that as a focus, to have more healthy food in schools. So okay. I'd be really surprised if that was coming down the pipe. Yeah.
Well, there was something like the president was asking to like give funds back to the government so they can cut the funds for the food for the kids. So, yeah.
I'd have to read the article to gauge.
Yeah.
But just my initial answer is no, I've not heard that. So hope that's good news.
No, he was here. He was in the Union Tribune, so.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so the last agenda item that I have, so we can get you on your way here soon, is a budget update. And I wish that I could tell you more than I have tonight, but that seems to always be the case. if you know, we have to start planning as a school district way early when the governor releases his official budget, because we have staffing implications, and there's ed code around if we're going to release staff. There's certain dates that we have to notice them, and it's a really uncomfortable process, just to be brutally honest with you, because we start that process now so that we can make the deadlines in case we have to make reductions. But sometimes the public, and especially the employees, take it as, oh, you're cutting my position. I look to view it as we're preparing in case we have to do that, because the governor doesn't release his official budget until June. And we don't really know. I mean, he gives indications, but he cut the COLA, which we're going to talk about here in just a minute, the cost of living allowance. When he cut that, it was almost a $7 million cut to our district alone when he reduced the percentage. He may, between now and then, realize, oh, I can't do that, I have to up it, and we might get that money back. But if we don't put the pieces in place for us to be able to say, hey, we need to make adjustments in staffing here, then we can't do it and we're stuck. And we've seen other districts recently have to make some very drastic emergency cuts because they weren't as prepared. And so I just want to say that it's Tom Liberto's pitch to you as the public that it has to be done the way that it has to be done because of the timeline. No one's looking to be cruel. No one's looking to say we don't need those positions. It's really about preparation in case the governor's budget doesn't come in as strong as we hope that it does. So he released his budget, I think it was around January 8th. That's when it got revealed to us. By mid-May, he should have a revised budget, and then his final budget will be like in the end of June. We have to approve our budget as a school district towards the end of June for the following year, but a lot of those preparations have to be done before we get to that point. So you heard it announced that the SBB, the site-based budgeting tool, was released today. So principals got an email that they can access it. They should be working with you very, very quickly about what their allocations will be, some of which you just got tonight in the Title I era. But you should have your LCFF and your discretionary and all of those things in there. And then you're going to have to look at some decisions if there's reductions in there. When those decisions are made, we have to compile them as a district, and then we have to notice employees of where this could be going. And that has to be done very, very quickly. So the timeline, I realize I'm the first one to admit in the room, is way too short, but by the time we get the governor's budget and we know what we're dealing with, to the time it has to go through the HR process and notifications, is very, very quick. So it was released today, and the due date is February 7th. So February 7th is the absolute last day that schools will be able to submit their budgets through the SBB process. So if you haven't heard from your principal already about meetings coming up and making sure that you're discussing the budget, please go back tomorrow and ask, and you can say, Tom Liberto told me to ask you when we're meeting on this because we need to do it. Okay, throw me under there. I have no problem with that, because if we don't get it done, we don't have any options. Okay? So if you haven't heard already, make sure that you're doing that. Some of Governor Newsom's budget things that he has put in there, his focus, his priorities, were quality classroom teaching, so PD for teachers, support for special education students, high-need schools, some of that large for that, schools at the heart of the community, so wraparound services, bringing outside services into the schools so that we can make the schools the hub of where families will get the support they need, and healthy food options, as the question came up just a little while ago. Now, those are all good things. However, what you may not be super transparent is a lot of these were continued from last year's budget. So he's made these priorities, and he's like, I'm going to put this amount and this much, $900 million there, $400 million there, but those are continued on from the previous budget. And so they're not increases. It's just putting more money, or the same amount of money, where the priorities are. So that didn't increase us at all. It just kind of kept us status quo. What I've already mentioned kind of crushed us a little bit. We thought that the cost of living allowance was going to be a 3.0. So we did a lot of our figuring as a school district. This is what our deficit's going to be, because this is what the COLA is going to be, this is what that's going to be, so on and so forth. January 8th, we all got shell-shocked when the governor said, I reduced the COLA down to 2.29. So it's a reduction of a 0.71. which doesn't sound like that much, but again, it translates to about $7 million for our district alone. So whatever we thought the deficit was going to be, now you add that $7 million. There's some other things that he rolled out that are making us backtrack and look at things. So that's why I started my presentation tonight saying I'd like to have more information for you, like, this is our deficit, this is how we're going to, but we're still working through that process because of the late news that had come from the governor's office.
I have
$87 million. Well, I wouldn't quote $87 million, but we do have some idea, but we're not sure exactly where it's going to fall.
That's what I heard.
Also, you know that we, as a school district, need to contribute to retirement systems, the CalPERS, the CalSTRS, and there were some changes in that, which we haven't been able to figure out exactly yet. So we kind of had a plan. But there was no additional relief, which we thought may be coming from the state to help us make those contributions, and that didn't come through. So we had to recalculate all of that also. The good news is what the governor has aligned his priorities with has already been the priorities in San Diego. It's almost like he looked at our district and he said, what are they doing? That's what I want to align the whole state. It's that close. So all of those things that we've been focusing on as a district will continue to be supported through the governor's budget. On February 1st, which is just a couple of days, there's something coming out called trailer bill language. It's going to explain his budget a little bit more. So I don't know how open that will be to the public. I'm pretty sure you can Google that and look at it. But that's what we as a district are going to be doing. We're going to be analyzing that trailer bill that comes out with all of the language about what these things mean to our district. And we'll continue to do all of our planning around that. We know that the legislation is still having hearings on the budget, so they can make some changes. And again, final adoption of the budget will be in June. So here are some dates that you probably want to write down. We're having board meetings to talk about budget, Board of Education meetings, February 11th and February 25th. So there will be other business taking place on those agendas, obviously, but that will be a heavy laden agenda with budget type things. So if you want to tune in a little closer on those dates, that would be great, February 11th, 25th. Then our second interim report will go to the board on March 10th. Interim reports, you know, every year we project what we think we're going to spend as a district, but we have certain things like we can't fill certain positions or contracts come in a little bit lower or higher. So interim reports are where we actually look at our expenses to that date and readjust our projections. So the second interim will come up on March 10th, and we should have that much more clear of an idea about how our end of the year result is going to be, so if we will have some monies to address any of the deficits that we're looking at. And then the adoption of the budget and the LCAP is scheduled for June 23rd of this year for the Board of Education.
And the pay slips should be given out on March
15th, I believe, is the date, yes. Hence the reason why we've accelerated and all of this is due February 7th. Okay, so I know that's a lot of information, and again, I wish I had even more to give to you, but I've given you everything that I have, and as we meet again next month, hopefully we'll have a little bit more definitive information that we can share with you to make sure that you are informed. I want to end the same way I started. Thank you for your participation. Go back to your school site, tell your principal that you want to be involved because you need to be involved, and we together will address these concerns and build our budget the best way that we can to support our students. Okay? Thank you.
So I hope you all heard the big date, February 7th. So if your school site has not met or has no plans to meet before the 7th, I suggest you let your principal, vice principal, whomever is in charge of being that liaison at your school site, that they know that we need to make sure that these budgets go to the financial planning office and get there by the 7th, because that's when they have to do their work. So it's important that if your school site is not planning to meet until, say, the second Monday of February or the second whatever of Monday of February, make sure that you're reaching out to, if you're not the chair, reach out to your chair. Make sure you're communicating, because your vote, your voice is very important. The principal cannot pass the budget on to the district without the SSC's approval. And you have a say in how that goes. They can't just bring you something and ask you to sign off on it, because that does not, that's not a shared decision-making process. So make sure that you understand what's happening, ask questions, and know who your resource teachers are if you need to reach out. We're just going to finish up here. I know we don't want to keep anybody any longer. The take to your SSCs was in your packet. We've got some different things on there that you can just take. You can take this one sheet back to your school site, discuss that, these topics with your schools. And we also put a little reminder on there that the SPSA is now the school plan for the school plan for student achievement, as opposed to the single plan. So make sure that you're having those conversations with your SSC. Did we have anyone, I know we've just started this, but do we have anyone who'd like to share anything of concern, any best practices, any interesting stories from their SSC? I know you probably all haven't really met with your SSC since December, but we're going to keep this piece on the agenda for the rest of the year. So we'd like to hear. It's a great opportunity for you to share, hey, we're doing this, it's really seeming to work out. There is an SPSA survey. There's even an SSC survey in your SSC handbook, which is on our DAC website under resources. It asks you, hey, are you working well with your SSC? Is this process going well? The SPSA survey also offers kind of the same questions, helps you analyze and assess your SPSA. Oh, and it was also attached to last month's school messenger. If you received the email from the district, from the DAC about the meeting reminder, if you're not receiving emails, let us know. Write it on a postie and drop it off at the front or with Mary. That way you can get those email reminders. For some reason, I wasn't getting them, and I had unfortunately unsubscribed, but Mary helped me out with that. I don't know how I ended up doing that. All right, everyone, if there's no additional comments from our SSC members, I wish that we had had a chance to get to our family engagement a little update, but she was going to provide a little bit. She's, oh goodness, do we still have enough people here to do that? Let's try. All right. I know everybody kind of looked at the minutes, but if we want to do a quick vote to approve, I would need a motion from motion from Roosevelt Hoover. Motion from Hoover to approve. A second from Knox. All those in favor, raise your blue cards high. Mary is counting. Tom's counting. He's playing solitaire. What is that? She was taking notes earlier. Oh, Rachel's counting. Thank you, everybody, for raising your blue cards. We want to make sure we don't have to leave this piece of business on the table. All right, any opposed? Oh. All right, any abstentions? All right, I'm going to look to Tom. We're good? All right, we approved our minutes. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. Make sure if you have children in the child care, you